Okay, so it's time. So it's 12 o'clock. As chair, I'll call the meeting to order, and I'll just do a roll call, and then after that, we're going to do some introductions.
Very good.
Okay, so Grant,
Good morning.
Kathy,
Here.
John,
Here.
is David Corris on? Yep, see
Yep.
him.
Hi.
Paul Hinch. Okay, Thomas Gill, I think I see you,
Here.
right? Great. Kimberly?
Here.
Yep. Okay. Kristen, she said she might be able to make it. Maybe not. Brian Thompson.
You thought of me.
Yep.
Who's
Doug
there?
Delaney.
Ryan's there.
Here.
Okay. Brian, are you there? See
I'm
ya.
here.
Okay. Felix Reyes or the mayor. All right. Dave Perullo says he might be able to make it a little bit later, I think. And then Paul Robertson,
I'm here.
Kaylee, Moran,
I'm here.
great. And then Tom Patton.
I am here.
Super. And then just a little bit of out of order, but Mike has assembled probably the largest Port Authority plan since I've been associated with Port Authority. And he wanted to go around and introduce his team and have them so you could see them personally.
Yeah, so over the past several months, welcome everybody. We've added two interns and the two community liaison hires that the board supported. So we'll go around the room and introduce each one.
I am Jordan Guider Brown from Massachusetts Maritime Academy in Massachusetts. I'm just a summer intern. Nice to meet you all.
Just a summer intern. He's more than just a summer.
Hello, I'm Melissa Root, community liaison covering essentially the southeastern part of the state.
Good afternoon, Anthony Frier, also community liaison. Just really glad to be on board.
Welcome.
Jill, Faye and Jill, you all know, but that's Faye.
I'm Fayola Finance Director, Connecticut Port Authority.
Don't forget, we've got a couple of new people on the board.
Paul, you always see me on the screen. Next.
I'm Matt Taylor. I'm also a summer intern, and I'm from the George Washington University.
I'm John Johnson from Gnawamba.
Good afternoon, Grant Westerson from Sabre.
Kathy Fesco from Woodbury, Connecticut.
Jill Dowling Moreno, office manager.
All right.
I didn't know you could do that.
Now you can. Now
Should
you can
we
put up.
do? Should we on the cameras go? I'll go.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm Doug Delina. I'm from the government. I'm here to help.
Thank you.
I'm the Treasurer's General Counsel, and I'm his designee on the board.
Kim?
Nice to meet everybody. For those new, welcome aboard. And no one is ever just a summer intern. So, Kim Buffay, I am the Bureau Chief of Policy and Planning here at DOT and the Commissioner's Representative.
Tom?
Yeah, hi, I'm Tom Patton. I'm just a normal guy. And don't know what else to say, but I'm happy to be here.
Follow.
Paula Robertson, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Economic and Community Development, and always glad to be here and welcome.
I think we have David.
Morning, everyone. David Corus, board member, former chair, and happy to be here.
And Brian.
Noon. Brian Thompson. I'm the director of the Land and Water Resources Division at the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. So cover coastal management programs. And I am Commissioner Dyke's representative.
Thanks, Brian. I think the last board member is Kaylee. I don't think we, do we
Yes.
miss anybody else?
Thomas Gill.
Mr. Gill.
Yep.
Oh, Mr. Gill's there.
Hi, I'm Tom Gill. I'm also a normal guy, and I'm Director of Planning and Economic Development for the City of Bridgeport.
Kaylee.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kaylee. I am a city planner at the City of New Haven.
Awesome.
And Kristen did join us.
Yes, I'm here. Sorry, I'm on a train.
We're just introducing everybody to everybody.
Oh, okay.
All right.
All right.
Sorry,
so,
sorry, I'm late.
Hey, Paul Hinge.
Oh, Paul.
Got to introduce yourself.
Paul Hinge. I'm a designee of Secretary Beckham. I work at OPM. I'm the director of asset management.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, item number two is approval of minutes of May 20th, which was a regular meeting, and June 24th, which was a special meeting of the board of directors. I think you all had those in your packets.
Motion to approve both sets of minutes. Second.
Okay. John and Grant. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, hearing none. Next on the agenda is public comment, and I'll have Jill explain public comment on Zoom, if you don't.
Yes. So if you are joining us via Zoom, you can either raise your hand or put a message in the chat to make public comment. If you're dialing in, you can press star 6 to unmute yourself or star 9 to raise your hand.
Any public comment on Zoom? Okay. How about we do have one from the audience? Any public comment at all? So, all right. So on to item number 4, Finance Committee update. I'll turn that over to Tom.
Sure. We had a good Finance Committee meeting this afternoon, or this morning, sorry. Went through the full year financial report, which is we all commented was very, very well done. Fayola, we think, has done a terrific job organizing the finances, accounting for them accurately. They everything reconciles, so we're very happy with that. And we approved with perhaps one addition of an additional footnote, filing to the Office of Fiscal Analysis quarterly report. And that concluded our business.
I don't know. Do we need a motion to send the quarterly in? Yep. So I believe the OFA report was sent to everyone. We did have one slight change, and everybody should have gotten it in their email. But we'll entertain a motion to approve the quarterly OFA report.
Yes, so moved. Second.
Again, John and Grant. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Next up, Human Resource Committee update. I believe John.
We approved from the Human Resources Committee the quarterly personnel status report that was submitted. And I think
it should be in your packet.
You have it in our packet,
really?
April 1st, 2025 to June 2025. Laid out 4.5 employees. Probably need a motion for approval.
We do.
So moved.
Grant first.
Second.
Second is Gaffney. Any discussion on the quarterly human resource report? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Passes. All right, committee assignments. Okay, so we have three standing committees, which is finance, which has 7 members, audit, and which has 4 members, and human resources. During our committee meetings, we voted in not per se new chairs, but for finance, Tom is going to take that on, and David's going to step back as a co-chair. And then in the HR committee meeting that we had this morning, Gaffney is going to take on co-chair with John Johnson. With that said, there is nothing that prevents any of you from participating in any of these. Now, I can obviously ask you and assign to you a committee, but I would much rather have you volunteer for a committee. So of those three committees, if you'd like to participate in those, I believe finance committee is going to every other month. Is that the way? Or every quarter?
Every quarter.
Every quarter. So it will no longer be every month. And the HR committee is every quarter. So it's not a great time commitment on your part. But if you would like to participate in that, please let Jill know, and then we'll assign you to those committees. Otherwise, the next meeting that we have, I'll probably try to assign a couple of you to some of the committees so that we can maintain some numbers. Let's see. I don't think I need to talk about any of those. The ad hoc committee for the strategy committee. Mike, do you want to talk about that just for a second?
Yeah, we had support from Kristen, Paul O, and Paul W, and Gaffney, as well as myself and a good portion of the team here, including Faye, to talk about strategy. And I will cover some of the details of what we talked about during my report. But I think the strategy committee concept will work out for us very well longer term. To leverage the board insight and your relationships with others in the world. And, you know, kind of the reason that you got appointed to the board was to get involved with certain topical areas. So I think that's going to be very helpful to being able to do things for the state.
Yeah, and one of the things that Michael talked about in his report is item 7B or Bravo strategy session that kind of goes in hand with the Mitch Hope meetings that we had over the last month and a half. So with that said, I'll go to item number 7, the executive director update.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. Now, I've got formatted this month so that we, this month, so we cover what we have for contract updates, specifically since there was a good bit of activity in several of these areas over the last 2 months. We did have an RFP out for IT services. We did select an IT service firm. Apex Technologies will be taking over that role. They have an approximate monthly fee for the number of staff size that we have. The one person sound computing that has been supporting us very greatly, I think since the Port Authority's inception, they've done a lot of work to be able to categorize files and search for things and update our equipment and put security controls in place. Out of the larger Apex organization, we expect to get some insights on streamlining the technology we use, making it more accessible, and integrating it with web updates that we'll be doing with Vincent Hope. So that transition will happen over the next couple of months. And the person that was doing it was very happy to be doing it for us, and is going to move off and do other things because he has his own business and has plenty of people to attend to. And Apex Technology has a larger footprint and will be good for us. Any questions on technology?
How much is it cost us on a quarterly basis?
I think it was under four.
Really?
Yeah, it was under 4,000. There's some startup fees that we'll have to pay. And based on their recommendations, I mean, you know, there's no desktop computer running the TV screen right now. There's a map to a server. We might be better off with some of those platforms. We will discuss whether iPads or laptops are better for people that are out in the field doing work all the time. I think there's a functionality choice there and a cost that we can manage better, but it's got to all be integrated. And so some of those costs will be equipment as we go through. We already will need to buy some equipment for Anthony. He's an upgraded laptop from what was laying in the closet when he arrived. So we'll be doing things. For the commercial fishermen, we were able to get the fence work done. The only delay in that was there was a nesting goose that had to finish having their family and move on before they were able to disturb part of the area. But we've extended the fence line down a good bit of the state pier. We've got about 800 or 900 feet of commercial fishing dock space, two power stanchions, and we've got slips assigned on either side of those two power stanchions. So right now we have four leases with four commercial fishing boats that will operate out of the state pier where it was just two before. So the extension of the fence made it possible to add two more people to that. And the fishermen are interested in a longer term relationship there and doing things to upgrade the facilities that they have and make sure they have other things that support commercial fishing, like generation of ice would be an appropriate next step for their business model after they get settled in there at the state pier.
That's a big number, the ice house.
Yeah.
Maybe we could work out a deal 50-50. Yeah.
Well, I want to see their plan, and they know they can't just go start doing something without working with us. One of the people that's docking at the commercial fishing pier at the state pier is somebody who was displaced as they do the elbow pier work in London. There's been some recent news about the steps necessary to refurbish that pier. It's a longer term operation than they thought.
Mike, how many fishing boats can we fit on that wall?
With some upgrades, you know, it depends on, of course, the length of the boat. We're talking 50 to 60 foot boats right now. It's a couple of 70s and 90s out there. But, you know, maybe we could fit one more in there comfortably without coming up the works as you were. They're renting by the slip. So if they happen to run two boats and it can fit in the slip, they can store two boats there. But, right now, four seems to be where we want to be. And then we're going to see how that does. They have to work with each other to manage the space, the land space down there. And they have to be mindful of the ferry traffic that goes in and out of that place. To date, Cross Sound Ferry has been very happy with the fishermen being over on that side of the river. I think the only restriction we put them on the lease agreement was that they couldn't moor ships or boats outboard of their boats. They had to be singled up along the pier so that they did not impact any ferry or inbound tug traffic that would be affected in turn.
Okay. Yeah.
Other questions on fishermen? And that's a completely separate access from the actual state pier, and it's not part of the security zone. Everything's the way it needs to be to maintain the security zone of the state pier. For marketing and communications, Jill, if you could share the screen. We did bring on Mintz and Hulk. They're working on website upgrades. I expect to, in the next couple of months here, see a new footprint for a website. We're working through that right now. We did have the whole team go up to Avon and meet with their team and go through some communication strategies and have some discussion on how did we want to communicate, what kind of organization do we have. One of the things they start with is a brand expression. I'm sharing that on the screen for you right now. It's not the final product, but you know, one of the things we had to make sure we clearly understood, both as a team here at the Port Authority and for our marketing and communications people, who's our primary audiences? And I thank Paul and Gaffney for traveling up there to be part of that meeting. But the primary audiences really are the government and business leaders in the state and any associated organization. So if there's a harbor commission or economic development commission associated with one of our municipalities or the state, that's our primary audience. And for government, we didn't want to segregate out these elected officials or those elected officials as opposed to commissioners or the governor himself. It's just government and business people in leadership roles. And of course, the secondary audiences are residents and visitors to the state, because there's a fair bit of tourism. We are focused on, part of our mission will be focused on the education community, because we need more people trained to come into the maritime economy. And we have a large military presence in Connecticut that we didn't want to leave out of the equation. So we consider those secondary audiences. The brand expression statement is still a work in progress. In general, our maritime economy is vital to Connecticut, which is why strengthening that economy is vital to us. Now, a lot of repetitive words in there, so we want to get a firm footing on that opening statement, so that's still in progress. The Connecticut Port Authority supports the maritime economy by fostering growth across the community. And what I've highlighted in yellow there are the primary elements that I think we're bringing to the organization. Providing guidance, resources, and advocacy that enables businesses, municipalities, and associated organizations to better operate out of and enjoy Connecticut's small harbors, deep water ports, and coastline. And there's a recognition going on right now that the deep water ports can do what the deep water ports can do. We do have a program that focuses on small harbor infrastructure and development, but there's so much stuff in between those, both, you know, between small harbors and large ports and between small harbors and beaches, that there's plenty to take advantage along the coastline. So we wanted a statement that wasn't, hey, we're your peer, we're willing to watch you succeed. This is a time where I think we need to provide some leadership, not by doing things for everybody, but to facilitate helping people get to the finish line on what needs to be done with what we said in the middle. That guidance that we can help out with, some resources that we may have, and the advocacy, whether it's needed state legislative changes or working with various groups or organizations, or being a go-between between state, federal government, and businesses in the state to help people get to the finish line. That's where we really need to be. So we will take any feedback by email that you have on that. I don't think that you've had the opportunity to think about it in this context and have a big board discussion, but certainly entertain any questions or comments on that at this time.
CMR.
All right, the CMR, that's the construction manager at risk contract. Of course, the contractor is Kiewit, and as everybody last knew, that the construction manager at risk was looking to be funded additionally for the work that they did at the State Pier. We've continued to discuss that. They would like to engage us in mediation, and we have our legal counsel developing the mediation plan right now. And so I expect in a few weeks that we'll have that to our liking, such that the board of directors can approve a mediation plan. And then we would set about jointly between us and the contractors selecting a mediator and then seeing what we could do in mediation over less than a 2-week period of time to see if we can find a middle ground on what they're looking for compared to what they provided to us. There were several issues that were not constructed as designed. However, the State Pier is operating wonderfully. The contractor has been interested in correcting what they could. There's some issue with the soil at the south wall that they have developed plans for remediation on that. And based on other activities at the State Pier, we were not able to give them access to go do that yet. It's a much simpler solution to the pounds per square foot issue that we discussed previously than what had originally been offered, which was almost a $2 million repair. So we're going to let that proceed. And like I said, we'll bring back to you a mediation plan that the board of directors can do.
For the south wall, though, that does bring it to its specifications.
So, right? The work that they will do on the south wall will make sure that the transport corridor, all aspects of the transport corridor will be rated for 650 pounds per square foot, where the current rating in about 4,000 square feet is 450 square feet, pounds per square foot. Any questions on the CMR contract?
The timelines, I think, are looking a little bit tight.
Well, you know, we're interested in engaging them to get to the right outcome for the state of Connecticut. It's the people's money. There's been a significant amount invested in the State Pier already. And, you know, through those discussions, we can figure out what the right thing to do is. And if we can't figure out that, I don't know what the next step will be, but we'll determine that over time here. I don't want to say that I'm trying to race towards it. Really, there was no contract closure date when I got here 6 months ago.
Yep.
I asked to be all closed out by June 1st. And I think a lot of things have happened between here and January to assure the contract closeout. You know, the website was transferred over to us. All the drawings have been developed and put on the right place on the internet that they'll turn over to us here shortly. The outstanding issues have been clearly categorized. And we've had several discussions about how to write that final check and close out the books on this. But we haven't closed out the books on this. So rush, hurry up and get it done by Friday. No, I'm not really in that mode right now. We will execute the process, make sure everybody understands what we're doing and how we're doing it. And when we have a result coming out of mediation, there'll be an opportunity to talk about that.
Probably the important thing to realize is that I think everybody's seen the activity at the pier over the last month with the Winsilla being there at the same time bringing in and marshaling all the marshaling pieces that are required to move forward with Revolution Wind. So it's fully functional, right? So finding a resolution, providing the ample time to do that is the right way to go.
Yeah. Is there an obligation on our part or their part to get this thing to mediation by October, or is it just an agreement?
Oh, there's a, I think we put it in the category of recognition that setting up that arrangement, the process to select a mediator between both that's acceptable to both parties, and then the timing of scheduling the availability of that mediator with our availability and their availability is what Kiewit and I discussed could potentially be as late as October. I don't think it will be any later than October to get there. But to think that we could put a contract in place next week and get in a room in August when mediator might not be available and we haven't even picked that yet was unreasonable expectation. So I think we're in a reasonable place. It, arguably, if we delayed that for some reason or another, or we couldn't agree on a mediator right away, that might shift a month or so, but this year. Other questions? Item five under contract updates is the harbor development agreement. We are in that agreement with Orsted / NEO. Orsted's the only remaining component of NEO and in structure. And there is a recognition that the two projects that we have going on right now, Revolution Wind, which should be finished in about 3 months, and then they will start Sunrise, which is an 84 turbine project. And their timeline to finish that is by the end of 2027, all completely executable based on their delivery mechanisms, their supply chain, the resources that they have for the installs and the progress that they've been able to make to date. So Paul and I met with Instructure and Orsted a couple of weeks ago to kind of strategize, hey, what comes next? Are there any more wind projects that need to be done? If there were, how do we get them mapped out in a timely manner so we know what's going on with the pier? One of the things that I have been stressing with the team is that, as I'll show you in some upcoming slides, the state pier can handle more than one thing at a time. Given the large amount of linear footage of dock space we have on a 35-acre pier, it'd be good if we were diversified. You know, we've seen some wind hiccups as the administration changed over the course of the beginning of the year. If we had two entities at the state pier and wind paused, then the other entity can make use of the space. And if the other entity paused, wind could make use of the space. So I think there's an opportunity here to talk to everybody about what that looks like and see what can be gained on multi-use of the state pier.
Is there any discussion about the potential of wind needing repairs or anything during the next?
Well, there have been some discussions. I mean, they move a lot of personnel out of Proport on high-speed ferries to get in and out, sometimes by helicopter if you need somebody out there pretty quick. I met some of them when I was at a helicopter underwater escape training last week. That was pretty fun. You know, there's going to be over the next 25, 30 years, which is the life of a wind turbine, some need to take some component back to the shop.
Well, that's the benefit of having as long a dock space as we have.
Yeah. So the heavy lift capability. Now, those cranes that are operating the large lifts at the State Pier, they're not State Pier equipment. They were brought in for this project. We have an opportunity in the future to figure out what kind of equipment do we want down there. Do we want to be able to lift containers off of ships? Do we want to be able to roll stuff on and off? Do we want to travel lift down there for some reason? There's a whole range of options that we could evaluate based on the next tenant and see what equipment the tenant would have to bring in and what equipment we need. There is talk about they may be needing to do some dredging to support particular ships coming in and out of there. And then that would have to be laid into the equation at the right times and with the right permit.
Be able to haul a submarine.
I don't know if hauling the submarine's worthy, but Paul and I did discuss, we have a little bit of submarine nuclear background in us. There may be some value to the Navy for certifying the State Pier to type a submarine to for logistical and weather purposes. Potentially there may be needs for them to do that, but you know, if you're going to dock a nuclear submarine to a pier, it's got to be approved by the right entities in the federal government. And I think if we can execute that process and know that they can do that, that's a future capability that I think the State Pier should.
Large crane we have there is not ours.
Neither one of them, no.
Are they leased?
They're leased.
SGRE, so Siemens Gamesa brings in all that equipment because they're the ones that are installing the wind turbines.
And for how long is the lease until?
So whenever.
Well, they have a 10-year lease, but Siemens' last project is going to be done in 2027. So yep. They're going to uproot everything that's not part of the State Pier, their trailer park, the cranes, the infrastructure that they need, the equipment that they've been moving things around on site for. Unless somebody coming in behind them says, hey, why don't you just leave all that and we'll buy it from you or something, because we're going to do something very similar. So we don't know what that looks like yet, but we do know that Orsted is engaged in figuring out in real time. And I would expect in the next 120 days that we have a very good appreciation for whether there's somebody who can come in there behind doing wind and what part of wind might have been.
If we owned the cranes or had the cranes, would they be useful in diversification purposes of use of the port?
You know, I would just say that even if it's not offshore wind that's there, then it would really be the responsibility of the instructor to determine what equipment they need on the pier be their responsibility.
At this time, it would be, you know, I'm not sure it's tenant specific. And unless we knew what the tenant was and how they were going to handle it, it might be just better for us to require that they bring their own equipment. So they're responsible for the maintenance and the upkeep on it, replacement and the operation of it. And, you know, if they left and they wanted to leave something behind, well, we could take ownership of something and it might be suitable for a future operation. But, you know, one thing we need to be mindful of always is how long is this going to last and who's going to do what next, or what two things can we do at a time? And the last part of all that is real estate around the State Pier. Something becomes available, we need to know what that could look like. If you look at Proport, they've been shipping cars into there, roll on, roll off. And there's got to be 120 acres of parking lot filled with cars out there. Now, I don't know why you deliver cars to a port just to park them, but at least we need a ship to come into New London with cars that has a ramp that somebody can drive them off. And I don't care if the parking lot's on the State Pier or around the block.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to figure that out, I think there's a need for that.
The tariffs may kill all that business.
I don't charge tariffs, so.
No. But that import cars business.
Could be. But the HDA is a living document. There is discussion about revising the HDA at the right time because all the partners recognize it is heavily focused on only wind. Prioritization of wind, make sure wind can operate out of there. And I'm certainly willing to have wind forever at the terminal. But if there's no wind going on, then the document shouldn't say that that's all we're looking at. It should say more. And Ørsted agrees with that.
And it's also in the HDA time requirements if it's going to be idle for how long.
Over 2 years.
Yeah. So that's all written into the HDA.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you. And there's some preservation of payments.
Yep.
For idling it for different periods of time too. So there's not an immediate cash flow concern for idling the port, but I don't want to see the port idled. It's a valuable resource to the community. And if one person's not using it,
a lot of jobs involved.
I want somebody else to be able to use it. Yes. Mm-hmm. Anything else on HDA? All right, Jill, if you would put up, I think, slide number 2 for the group as we talk about the strategy session we had. And we met for about 45 minutes and more or less a brainstorming session. So we started out with the things that we have been talking about globally that the Port Authority can be involved in: safety, shipping, state gear, dredging, education, environment, on and on for those first two small print lines that I have up there. And then over the course of the discussion, the group focused on, hey, let's make sure we're ready for all the grant cycles that are available from federal and state governments. And there's a lot of them. So, you know, we know that PIDP grant notice of funding comes out in April every year. This year it was delayed until September. But if it's got an associated timeline for it, we always want to know who can we help, who can we sponsor, what can we support to improve infrastructure and make use of all the maritime grants and all the Build America grants that are available. So we're gonna focus on what the grant cycle is and then focus on what are we gonna do with those cycles.
So are we able to write grants here as an organization?
I think as an organization, we're able to coordinate the writing of grants.
Okay.
We may have to seek other agencies to help out with information input. We've been discussing potential for a grant in Groton for somebody that I'll talk about later. They would do most of the grant writing and we would support information to them, but we would be the submitter. But grant applications do not look to be extremely complicated or difficult. Right now, the federal government wants to know, how much do you need? What am I going to get out of it? When are you going to do it? And if it's to beef up infrastructure and keep business going and it's a shorter timeline, much clearer approval path than something that, well, we're thinking about studying, maybe doing something in 10 years. And the other thing that we've been talking about is we really have to get more public-private partnerships going because there's some speed involved. There's some executionality involved in that. Anytime you go talk to somebody about, hey, we'll get you a federal grant, that only takes 3 or 4 years to get the money in the bank. Businesses can't count on that. They need to be able to start up and go, not come to the room and wait. The next bullet says study and plan. We have a 2018 study for the maritime economy that's on our website. That was done by the predecessor to who?
CERC.
Yeah, CERC, which is the predecessor to Innovation CT.
Advanced CT.
That's the word I was looking for. But there's, as we've talked about in a year before, those recommendations are actually being implemented over time with the modification of the state pier, with the things that we have been talking about. But one of the things Max is helping us out with is let's go find all the studies that are available online in the state, in council of governments, and in economic development space, and in-state entities and find out what recommendations were made. Are they still valid? Can we help with any of those before we just launch another study? But ultimately, we might launch another study. Somebody was kind enough to show me this book. It's an economic and engineering survey of all navigable waters in the state for the Connecticut Port Survey Commission. Last done in 1946.
Looks like it.
It's a really good format, and perhaps it's one we could repeat with minimal effort for modern times. But that format I like, and it wouldn't be hard to replicate. So perhaps we roll up all of our other information into something that looks like this and come out with a document. There's a great need to collaborate with the existing port authorities. I'd love to go market Bridgeport and New Haven and New London even to any place I go in America or in the world. But we don't run Bridgeport and New Haven. So we have to be on the same page. We have to understand what they're trying to do in their communities and where we can help bring something to them, we will. But we really have to work with them. So that's where the collaboration comes from. I did get an opportunity to go down and meet with Tom Gill in Bridgeport and Gina, and there's a lot going on in their harbor. What we have to do is figure out what else could go on maritime-wise. They're tearing down a power station. They're putting up housing, like a large ferry business out of that port, too. So wherever we can collaborate, we will. We continue to work with CBIA and the business community on what can we export by sea in the state of Connecticut. Between exports and cruise ships, that's kind of use of pier space we're not making use of now. And then with the shipbuilding act that was recently signed and the focus on shipbuilding in Connecticut, Connecticut used to build a lot of ships. They can still do that work. Where people want to get reinvested in that, we will certainly support that. A lot of discussion on rail. Thank you, Gaffney. Gaffney always brings up rail for some reason. New Haven's actually leveraging some grants for rail expansion. They're moving rail into their warehouse, and they're expanding their ability to move liquids by rail in New Haven. So that's very good. But we have rail capability on both sides of the Thames River here in southeastern Connecticut. There is rail capability at the State Pier. It's ours to do what we think best with, and we have to get everybody together on that. And then board input. Closing some vacancies on the board. We do have five vacancies, and really getting the involvement from the board members to accelerate what we're doing with the staff we have here at the Port Authority. So we try to involve you in different things. There's plenty of room to help, and we really do want the input. And it is very valuable to have some of the, to have designees from all the commissioners in the state of Connecticut involved in the process. It's a great communication conduit for just everybody being on the same page. And it's a two-way street. You know, we'd like to hear from board members, and we like to keep board members informed of what's going on. So that was the gist of our strategy session. Any comments, questions?
So how did shipbuilding get involved? Are we referring to electric boat and that type of operation? Or
Well, we're referring to many small shipbuilding facilities that used to exist up and down the rivers and along the coast in Connecticut. I don't know what the ultimate goal is for the Stratford Army plant. There's an organization that wants to do modular shipbuilding. They could do it in Connecticut. We are joining Nuclear Energy Maritime Organization, NEMO. NEMO is looking at nuclear power for surface vessels. That would be a modular installation, and that refueling part would have to take place somewhere, and the construction would have to take place somewhere. But that's an effort that got started about a year ago. We had the Port Authority join. Paul and I have a background in nuclear ship handling. And there's a need at this time. The next step is they're up to the part where you have to put rules in place for a nuclear ship to visit a port. How many ports just want a nuclear vessel to show up? So There are rules and regulations that can be put in place. And we certainly have nuclear ships coming in and out of Connecticut all the time. They're very safe. Public needs to understand that, why it's safe, and then the rule set needs to be in place for ships to be able to come into Connecticut for nuclear power. But it's a great, clean, reliable fuel source that you can go 10 years between refueling.
Underutilized.
It's underutilized. Mm-hmm. So that's how we got a little bit about how we got into the ship. Questions on strategy? As always, you sending notes to me or the staff here at the Port Authority. Gaffney likes to forward us news articles and suggestions all the time. And I've heard a lot from Mr. Johnson, and Paul and I chat frequently because Paul's got another organization that's plugged into the region. And wherever there's synergies, we're going to get involved and we're going to help.
And Michael, I'm sure that you were involving Connecticut Marine Trades Association all the way along.
Yeah, CMTA is the recreational boating community. We're members of CMTA.
Yeah.
We're all going to Dave Crocker's boatyard after work today for a young professionals cookout over there in New London.
You're going to stand out.
You stood out last time. I may as well stand out next time. Are you going with me?
No.
That way I would stand out.
I aged out of that long time ago.
Well, there's no age limit to young professionals. There's none.
Young and hard.
let me talk about dredging because it's important. It's important to the state. It's important to the pilots because the safety and navigation relies on dredging and keeping our channels open. New Haven is somewhat shoaled. We had discussions about maybe dredging early, but it doesn't look like that's going to be necessary. The contract's been awarded for the maintenance dredging in the New Haven Channel for October 1st. Cashman's going to be doing that. And Cashman knows it's shoal. And we've talked about getting in there early and taking care of the places that would improve safety the most first. So they have the maintenance dredging contract for this dredging season, October 1st to February 1st, to clear that path. They had wanted to couple that with the expansion project in New Haven, but they weren't able to get everything ready for that. The expansion project involves taking a 35-foot channel to 40 feet, which is seen as an economic engine driver for New Haven, so you can bring deeper draft vessels in there. But they're also going to widen the turnaround basin, and most of the piers in New Haven are getting themselves dredged to 40 feet to match up with that timeline. That's going to take two or three dredging seasons in the follow-on year. So 26 into 27 and 27 into 28 to get all of that material moved out. Some of it's going to be beneficial use in the area. Some of it get disposed in open water. But the Corps has a plan for that. The state of Connecticut for that expansion project has to kick in 20%, which is almost $20 million. So we've reported that to the legislature.
There was no chance on expanding the dredging window per year.
I went to Industry Day for the Army Corps of Engineers. That's where they open up the plans to vendors who will then bid this coming January on that project. And the vendors got to ask a lot of questions about, you know, what did you expect? One of the things that has to go on during that maneuver is to put the cross sound cable at its final resting depth of 48 feet. It was never put at its final place. So they're going to have to pick up the cable, splice it, make it longer, trench that 48 feet, put it down. And then forever, we won't have to pick it up because we'll dredge on over the top of it. So there's a lot of intricacies with working logistics in the harbor. And one of the question that everybody asked was, do we have to do it in three seasons or if we can just do it in two seasons, can we? And so the Corps is fine with doing it sooner. They just didn't know who was going to bid, and they didn't want to rule anybody out if they wanted to take
it. You can do it sooner, but you got to still stay with these calendar limits.
They do. Occasionally, DEEP has waived the February 1st, depending on how things are going this season. They could go out to February 15th or March 1st, and maybe through some combination of those things, they can do something.
How much impact on the final allowance for these contracts has New York been? or how much of an impedance is here?
No impedance at all for not for the areas that they're planning on putting.
And so, Mike, the $20 million that the state's supported, is that already partially funded?
Yeah, we have about $19 million available to fund such a dredging operation. The next two problems will be a little bit more impactful. So we need more engagement and more help for finances in the out years, because Bridgeport and Black Rock Harbor are getting dredged next. The authorized channel depth is 35 there. Black Rock's probably 18. Anyway, they need dredging. The material in Black Rock is contaminated. It's got to go in a CAD cell. So they're going to build a CAD cell to dispose of the Black Rock material.
What's the contamination from? They'll,
Everything from heavy metals, cadmium, stuff like that, PCBs.
Trying to think of the name of the plant that was over there.
Yeah, I don't remember it either, but they used to make transformers and store all kinds of things. So the part that can be costly for us, and I do want to spend the money, when they build a CAD cell for BlackRock, they have asked us, do we want additional capacity? Now, if we had to go build a CAD cell for ourselves without any help from the Corps, we'd have to pay for the whole thing. It's very expensive. But a CAD cell is just a hole in the ocean. They take out what will presumably be untouched clean material from down deep. They'll go down to 80 feet below the water surface. So you're removing 40 to 50 feet of sand. You could probably use that sand beneficially on our beaches for remediation and whatnot. And then you'll have this big open hole in the water that you can put the contaminated material in. And then when you're done filling that up, you can cap it. If we buy excess space, then we will be able to offer that to our business community and our municipalities as a place to put contaminated material, instead of hauling it out of the water and disposing of it at $400 a cubic yard. Somebody needs 50,000 yards of contaminated material removed, and that's $20 million for the privilege. That's not sustainable. So if somebody 10 years ago or 15 years ago had bought excess capacity in a CAD cell, we would still be using it. So I think it's our time to make that available during this project so that that capacity is available to Connecticut's shoreline for the next 20 years. That will probably be in the $20 million cost range. It's got some variability based on the final location and how much excess capacity they could give us, but I think the max is probably $20 million. So we have to plan for that with the state.
And Mike, and if we do that and we don't fill it up with Connecticut dredge material, is that space we can sell to others and recoup our investment?
Yes, some of the models that have been done in Massachusetts and Rhode Island is to charge a tipping fee to others that might make use of it, and then you essentially recover some of the costs that you put into it.
Yeah. How do they determine the location of these CAD cells?
A lot of hydrological surveys and soundings and sonar and core samples and geological testing. So we'll talk more about that in the next one. The dredge material management study is a $3 million effort that the state of Connecticut paid for several years ago. I think the disappointment in this project was it really was in the study part a long time. We want to survey everybody and find out how much dredge material people might have over the next 20 years. And when they got that finally done, they said, oh, that kind of matches for what we've done over the last 20 years. So I think the equation was a lot simpler than the study time they did. But we are evaluating nearshore beach refurbishments as a potential place to put dredge material. And what the Corps will do is map all that out. So when we have the material, it can go there, and we know that it can go there. There's discussion about expansion of Faulkner Island, which is south of
Guilford.
Guilford, thank you. Faulkner Island's gotten smaller over time from wave action out in Long Island Sound, and it's a great bird sanctuary. And if it was bigger, it would
rabbits,
so grow more rabbits. So that's a place where we could put material that's clean And then we have a need at this end of the state for contaminated materials. So they're evaluating CAD cells in New London. I just watched a great demonstration in New Bedford from, I think it was it New Bedford? Yeah, New Bedford actually, New Bedford or Maine recovered like 1,000 linear feet of dock space by creating a CAD cell in their harbor, and where they were never able to remove the material financially before and do something with it by creating the CAD cell and putting the material in there. They're a big expansion project. So in New London Harbor, there's three areas that they've selected to evaluate. One of them was actually in the Federal Navigation Channel itself, which we didn't think was a good idea. So they're starting with one area, and then there's some areas in Greenwich that they're going to evaluate for CAD cells. So those are the places that they're studying for dredge material management in the state.
Did the Navy have one in the London area? And is that still in operation?
I don't believe it's still in operation. The last dredging that was done on the Thames did go to the Eastern Long Island Sound disposal site against the objections in New York, but it was for national security. So we're continuing to work with the Army Corps and New York to get some alignment between New York on what can be done and when it can be done. One of the things the Corps is doing is they're sharing a lot of data early in the process with New York rather than wait till the end and say, hey, just check this box. That's when the objections happen. So I think the relationship's growing, and I think we'll see improvement of that over time. Other questions about dredging? Recent activity, and I'm gonna go fast. I have a Marine Highway Group formed. It involves people downstate, New York Economic Development Commission, people that tow barges, people that want freight moved, the New York Port Authority is involved as well. The goal is to make the math determine what can we move by container into Connecticut. So you got a number of containers in New York. Where in Connecticut doesn't need to go. Again, they came at me with the study. We got to study that. And then somebody suggested dusting off their old studies, including the recognition that Customs and Border Patrol has a list of every container that comes into the United States, along with its final destination zip code. Before it even gets on a ship overseas to come here, somebody knows there's a box coming to Old Sabre. So with that information, I think we can develop what freight could go by sea and land in different spots along the coast. Now, once we learn that, we're going to have to figure out who can handle that material, what changes do we need to make to our infrastructure, what additional equipment do we need to buy, what logistics do we need to set up to get that going. There's been a lot of discussions with a lot of vendors over time, but one of the discussions is always, okay, we'll show up to drop stuff off, but when we leave, we want to take stuff with us, and that's where the export part comes in. So we're working through that. We're working through Buckeye Terminal in Groton. When we learned that they were going to stop operations, we started talking to them about the cause of that. They had a long-term infrastructure problem. We think that can be helped with sponsoring a PIDP grant. So we're working towards the September 10th deadline to develop that with them. However, they're also out of fuel because they're not keeping the tanks full. And there seems to be Buckeye Limited Partners that owns the facility and operates it, and Buckeye Energy Services that sells fuel and keeps the tanks full for several other vendors that operate out of there. We've been in meetings with Buckeye, Senator Summers, Representative Bumgardner, and several others in the fuel business to make sure that we understand what are we doing here long-term. I mean, they're barging fuel oil into that facility, and as a result, we don't have any tanker trucks bringing fuel into southeastern Connecticut. If you replace the barges with tanker trucks, we're looking at 15 to 20 tanker trucks a day coming into the region from somewhere just to supplant the barge activity. Much better by large-scale barge than by tanker truck. I invited Kim Lachey to join our fuels group in southeastern Connecticut because that's something I think the Department of Transportation needs to be plugged into. And last week we met with the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection to see what types of things we can do to help fuel handlers out with regulations. And you know, there's limitations on truck weights and environmental conditions, and there's a whole host of things we need the whole team to get together. Summer interns, not just another intern. Jordan's working on foreign trade zones. We have 4 foreign trade zones in the state. They seem to be underutilized based on some reports I've seen of national foreign trade zone use. So we're looking to understand that process a little bit, maybe educate and communicate to the business community how those can be leveraged. The 4 trade zones, if you're not familiar with them, are at Bradley Airport, New London County, the Greater New Haven area, and Bridgeport. And so Jordan's going to put together some information. We're going to go visit some of the people involved in that here in the state of Connecticut right now, and some of the surrounding states who have been successful, and see what we could do to leverage that for the state. Pilot Commission meets monthly. Last meeting, I think I told you that the Coast Guard was looking at changing how buoys are placed for navigation, and we provided feedback. The Port Authority has provided feedback, as well as several other pilot associations, harbor commissions, port authorities around New England, because the region that's affected is New England. And I think we copied the governor and the senators and the representatives. And I know Senator Blumenthal signed on to a letter with several of the New England senators to ask the Coast Guard to either delay or study that more carefully before making wholesale changes to any buoy placements.
In driving one of the cruise boats for the Valley Railroad, I've had occasion to call New Haven and report broken aids and whatnot, signboards that are down off of landside things. And it's interesting when you get feedback on the radio or on the telephone with somebody at New Haven sector, when they say that we only have one vessel to do maintenance in Long Island, North Shore and South Shore. So there's stuff that I've called in, missing sideboards on the lower river below the Haddam Bridge. And one of them's been 6 weeks, and one of them has still not been replaced. It's not visible when you're navigating up the river unless you know what to look for. Just they're so short in, and I gotta believe that's gotta have something to do with the fact that we wanna cut back on some of these navigation.
So we've heard that rumor that this is a budgetary issue and they don't want to maintain as much, but no, there's a balance point. Does every buoy in the country have to stay? Should we have refined input on what they're going to do? And should we be told what they're going to remove well in advance of any removal to make sure that that's really what we want to do once a decision's made? So they were at the point where they were looking for feedback, and I think they got plenty. So we'll see what happens next. And I think, Grant, to your point, the further you go down in the Coast Guard hierarchy, the more you'll hear people talk about,
we don't have enough people.
We don't have enough people. Yeah. Rather than somebody triggered, hey, it's time for a review, we're going to start in region. So we're mindful of that. There's a somewhat marketing communications, but support of our military. There's a veterans coffee group that meets every second Tuesday of the month at Philomena's. It's hosted by Mike Brissetto. They have a rather large crowd there. We're going to support the October celebration. We're going to sponsor that. It's the day after the Navy's 250th birthday anyway, most of the vets are Navy vets. So we'll be supporting them in October. We'll also support a future celebration at the State Pier. Want to bring together the instructor workers, the Siemens Gamesa workers, the Orsted team to celebrate. We talked about probably the transition from Revolution Wind to the Sunrise win because those guys are doing an awful lot of work over there. I tried to tee something up for the crew of the Windzilla when it was in, but they left too soon. We didn't get that off the ground, so we'll do something different. I've been asked to join Senator Murphy's council for transportation in the state. And he's got another council for Long Island Sound. He brings together a lot of people that can hear what's going on with different areas, so we're supporting that. They meet periodically. I think it's 4 times a year. Can you pull up the slides? We're going to share the screen again. Oh, yeah, state pier versatility. I think that's a picture of Jordan holding up the Windzilla. So if you didn't see what the Windzilla looks like alongside the state pier, that's a picture of it. Next page. We'll give Jordan a break. So on the left side of the screen is Windzilla floating. And on the right side, you can see Windzilla floating, but also there's a transport vessel behind the Windzilla offloading, I think, blades in this picture. Blades or tower sections. Might be tower sections. So look at the enormous amount of space we have at the state pier to handle more than one thing at a time. Next slide. Just a couple of different views. That's a picture of that's actually Tony Sheridan taking a picture of the Windzilla from the state pier on the right. And on the left, that's what it almost looks like from Paul's office. I was in his parking lot when across the river. So you can almost reach out and touch that thing from the Groton side. That's how big it is. Next slide. When I was up in New Bedford, they have installed a wind installation facility as well. They are a blade replacement project right this second because they're the ones that had the blade failure off of Martha's Vineyard. So they're either putting the next generation of blades on the ones and recommissioning them, or if they haven't been replaced yet, they've got them tethered. So you won't see them spinning if you're out there. But this is what their field looks like from both sides. If you notice on the left-hand side, there's like a rock wall off to the left part of the screen. That's actually the hurricane barrier in New Bedford Harbor that they installed in 1966. It's a 20-foot high barrier. It's got an opening in it, but the opening restricts the size of the ship that can come in there. And so the way the New Bedford Harbor is laid out, all they can do is be a feeder barge through the feeder barge system to supply wind, where the state pier really does have the capability for a wind installation vessel to park next to it and lift everything onto it. So I just thought I'd show you those from my trip. Next. While I was up in New Bedford, they kind of described what they've been able to do with their harbor. And I would say there's still more that they can do rather than what they have done. But you can see how each parcel is laid out with a little explanation of what they were trying to do there and what the investment was. We're going to use this as a model for our harbors in Connecticut. Mainly, I want harbors to be harbors. Right now, you have New London Port Authority or New London. State Pier, New London, but there's a harbor there. It's got Groton on one side, New London on the other side. We want the whole team to work together for what goes on in the harbor. And you can find that everywhere along the coast. Somewhat necessary, but I think we can improve. Next slide. I got this strange email from the mayor of New London, and he said, hey, can you see if this is real? They contacted him about, somebody from Japan contacted him about touring the state pier. So I sent the email over to Homeland Security in the state of Connecticut, and they said, Mike, I think it's real. These guys actually have roles in port authorities over there. The time that it was sent matches the difference in time zones and whatnot. So I had one team's meeting with three Japanese people in the middle. Can you zoom in, Mo? The tall guy that I'm standing next to is EG. And we had one team's meeting, brought him over here. They came over July 3rd. We had him over here in the office for an hour or so, talked about our project. And then we went toward the state pier. We took him out to lunch afterwards. But there's global recognition that of the work that we have going on here in the park.
When are you going back for your visit?
We haven't set that up completely yet, but interestingly enough, they were talking to one of the guys from Orsted, and he was familiar with the Japanese ports, and they had already visited Denmark, which is where he was from, and it was like old home week. Yeah. Next slide. Oh, and watched the fireworks from Mitchell Beach last Saturday. Guess who I ran into? That's Ulysses Hammond. Remember him?
It's like he's very relaxed.
He does look very relaxed. Questions?
Mike, on your first bullet point from Maritime Marine Highway thing, is there any point of talking to the Port of Boston to join the group? How much product do you think comes in from Boston ports into Connecticut?
Well, that's the data that we need. I'm more focused on clearing the road traffic between New York and New Haven based on a transportation study that we have. That doesn't mean there's not opportunities to do something out of Boston, but I think the first step is to clear 95 somehow. 20,000 trucks a day. If we could get to half of that, what would it look like? That'd be a large operation. So we need to start small, get the supply route enveloped, and then scale that up. And yes, there's room for New York to go to Bridgeport, New Haven, New London, and pop over to Providence. And there's room to come out of Virginia. We've had some discussions about that. And there's room to come out of Boston.
If you had container capability, mm-hmm. how much pushback do you need from London?
I don't. We haven't had discussions with New London proper on, hey, this is what we're going to do here. For containers, the limitation at the state pier for rail is you can't double stack to your on the other side of three overpasses. So we need a solution for that or a place upriver where we could deposit containers onto rail. And there might be some room in Uncasville. If I was depositing containers in Uncasville, I would not want to go by truck through neighborhoods to the highway. Not the best, but you could go by truck from New London to the highway. I don't envision anywhere in Connecticut where we have these big yards with lots of containers stacked up. Apparently, there's a fair bit of turnover of that material at the Port of New York. It's not just sitting there idle. It always moves. But I can't tell them.
So in your mind, you're thinking the port onto rail and out of
onto rail or onto truck, but in real time, not stacked up waiting for someday when the trucks come up.
Yeah.
And a lot more local truck drivers instead of over the road.
Yeah, last mile delivery.
Yeah.
And when we say grow the maritime economy, part of that grow the maritime economy is please don't go backwards. And when we talk about somebody like O&G that needs dredging done, they bring in sand by barge into Stanford. The equivalent of 32,000 trucks of sand a year they bring in by barge. That's 100 trucks a day laden with sand coming across the bridges and highways. That's heavy equipment, sand, that will just add to the traffic patterns. Same with fuel oil. When I do the math on fuel oil, 20 tanker trucks a day. If you remember some of the most impactful accidents on our highways, it was two tankers that destroyed two overpasses on 95 in the southern part of the state. We had an unfortunate accident on the Gold Star Bridge where a small tanker had an accident and burned up part of the bridge that didn't have any structural damage to it, thank goodness, because imagine what the region would look like without the Gold Star Bridge.
When I was young, we had seven tankers a day going up to Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have none.
Right.
Of course, the fallout on that is, the Corps says, well, you don't need to dredge.
Right. I've had that discussion with the Corps. They say, well, we've done a study and we don't need to dredge too deep because the ships don't use it. And I asked, is that because they don't have the water? They said, well, we never thought of that before.
5 to 6 feet in East Hartford, right near an old oil terminal.
Yes.
Only seeing 5 and 6 feet.
So there's three or four other things that are going on in Connecticut that we're going to try to get involved with. The last legislative session set aside two infrastructure improvement districts. One's in East Hartford, Port East Side, it's called. It's trying to develop an area along the river, which should include some maritime economy in it.
Built for that area.
Yep. And Park City in New Haven, Bridgeport. So to set up these improvement districts, like Steel Point and Bridgeport's one of them, you should be able to do things. The legislature created a Puerto Rican Connecticut Trade Commission, but doesn't look like any clear path to involve the Port Authority on that. I think if you're going to do trade with an island nation, you should involve the Port Authority. So I'm going to see what we can do to help out with that. And similarly, last year they created an Ireland Connecticut Trade Commission. I don't know if Tony Sheridan had something to do with that or not, but potentially. But again, another island nation across the water that you would think if we wanted to leverage a relationship with them, we figure out how to move goods and services back and forth.
No, you can't buy it back.
Yeah. No. So those are a few organizations we're going to try to help out and collaborate with. Other questions? Comments? I left out two-thirds of where I've been over the last 2 months.
Good luck.
Okay, agenda A, grant updates, small harbor improvement program.
SHIP program was modified by the legislature. We think it provides for grants to the Port Authority in the amount of $5 million. Last time I saw the legislation, it was to be funded by bonding. The general fund or any other such means as they felt like it. And that money was supposed to come to a Port Authority Small Harbor Improvement non-lapsing account. And once that money is accessible to us, we will be ready to have modified procedures for people to participate in Small Harbor Improvement Program money. To make that announcement before we know where the money source is will put us in the same situation as we were last year, where we're waiting for the bond commission to act after the board approved SHIP grants in October, and we told people in April, and then we're getting the contracts in place now, and all that stuff will happen this year. It'll do two things for us. It'll make it more efficient to offer money to municipalities and businesses. And the second thing is, if we don't use the whole $5 million on the first solicitation and we know we have X left over, we can do another solicitation and we can do it throughout the course of the year. So I think it's very, very good action by the legislature to set it up like that. They did allow all areas to be accessible to the SHIP grants. It used to exclude deep water ports, Bridgeport, New Haven, and New London. Now it only excludes ports that the Port Authority operates, which would be just the state pier. So now New London, Bridgeport, and New Haven could apply for Small Harbor Improvement Program money to take care of some of the things that are not deep water port stuff around their harbors for public access to waterways and different things to beef up their infrastructure and make things safer for the community. And then the last thing they did was open it up to businesses. Businesses were primarily interested in some relief from having to pay extra for if there was extra costs associated with beneficial use of dredge material, because that does cost more to put it up on a beach than dump it in open water. Some escalated costs for not being able to use the Eastern Long Island disposal site and having to truck it to or ship it to Central or Western. And some excess costs, the relationship between New York and Connecticut is such that sometimes double sampling or extended sampling is required. And that is a lot of money. So we're going to put those all out in our policies and procedures. Those drafts will go out in about a month so that people can review it and give us feedback. I'll certainly appreciate feedback from the board when we get there. And then we'll get that codified and hopefully get the money in the right place and execute the next round of the ship.
Hey, Mike, can I ask a couple things? When we talk about needing to identify which source of funding is going to fund this $5 million, do we know, like, what's the process or timeline for getting that answer?
Paul Hinch and I have talked. He's talked to some people over on the bond side of the house who don't really know anything about it yet. And my next move is to follow up with the two state senators who are involved in that, Senator Austin and Senator Cohen.
Okay, thanks. And then I guess the other question I had was,
Doug, I think
go ahead.
The main purpose to the funding part is, if you commit to spending $5 million a year to improve small harbors, and maybe it's not something you want to borrow money for year over year, maybe you just want to put it in the budget, and they gave themselves a legislative path to do that.
Okay. And right now, do we just have that funding for one more year, or is there already legislation that authorizes follow-on tranches for follow-on fiscal years?
Now, they maintain the old tranche out to the end of this current fiscal year. So the next session, they will have to renew that somehow. They could easily just make it a line item in the budget and not have to put those tranches out there unless they decide that's the way they want to go.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. We do have one other grant, working through the EPA Clean Ports Program grant for the New London State Pier Shore Power Project. We have some ongoing engineering work to develop that project. The engineering team and our supply chain people have been soliciting that to vendors. We're getting their feedback now. It's kind of like the industry day for the Army Corps of Engineers, where we explain to people what we're trying to accomplish and they give us some feedback on what the submittal should look like. There's a balance point between whether you use a fixed or a mobile device. There's some positives with the mobile about flexibility in supplying different vessels and minimization of infrastructure. But then if that mobile device costs so much that we'd rather put the money in infrastructure and make it a fixed device, there's a balance point there. So we've been engaging people with that. In about a month, we'll know whether the approximate price is within the range of what the grant can handle, which right now we think it is. And so we'll execute the next steps to be able to put out a bid for long lead items and pick a supplier. But that $5.3 million grant that we can still draw down on as a contribution for construction from us of $300,000 and for materials from us of $300,000, that is largely on track. That's it for grants.
Okay. Agenda number 9, old business. Don't think we have any. Number 10, new business. Any new business that folks want to bring?
Just like I said, we have a Facebook page reinvented now, Anthony's going to work on the LinkedIn page. So if any of you are on either of those platforms, if you could follow the Connecticut Port Authority and perhaps hit a like when we do post, that would help extend our reach. We'd appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any other items? Can I entertain a motion to adjourn?
Don't move.
John and Grant. That said, I'll see everybody.